Back to tonsillectomies and doctors' reluctance to perform the operation any longer and just whip out the tonsils where once upon a time they would have done it without thinking twice about it. Brianon, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, how are you?
What change did you see in your son after he'd had his tonsils removed?
Basically, it changed life for everybody. He, up until he was about 2.5 when he had them, he didn't walk like that lady yesterday. He didn't walk till he was 21 months. He had sleep apnea, so he snored very loudly at night. He sweated at night. He had no energy levels. He was constantly crying, constantly sick.
And how many separate infections had he had at that stage?
I was quite lucky that I had a nurse practitioner who listened to me. So he'd had 7 antibiotics in the space of 6 months. And I went into her and said I wasn't prepared for him to have another antibiotic. And she agreed to refer me then to a consultant. And that's when I started to keep a log of all of the physical condition that he had, all of the development concerns that I had, his height, he was very small.
So did you really have to argue your case with the consultant?
Well, I think I had to argue my case with the GPs to get the consultant appointment.
Okay.
A lot of the GPs didn't listen to me, and a lot of the GPs, he had recurrent conjunctivitis as well. He had a lot of vomiting that wasn't related to tummy bugs, so I think that was to do with the tonsils being enlarged, so he would physically gag, and he would just vomit for no reason.
Is that him in the background there, or is that somebody else? Sounds a little bit younger.
That's the youngest one in the background,
right, okay.
A lot of the doctors just put it down to, oh, it's just his age, his immune system is down, gradually his immune system will build back up again.
Anyway, long story short, they came out. How did he develop thereafter?
And the adenoids came out at the same time. They were both enlarged. And within 2 weeks, he started to eat food that he'd never eaten before. Within 6 weeks, he'd grown 1.5 inches.
Wow.
He'd stopped snoring. He started getting a full night's sleep. He used to nap for about 3 to 4 hours during the day because he just had no energy during the day. He dropped his daytime nap straight away after the operation once he'd recovered.
Yeah.
And he was just generally a happier child.
So you would say to Emma, who was on yesterday, that she should fight her corner here?
Fight her corner, do her research, take a daily log, start looking at all the other problems that she may not think of as being related to the tonsils, like snoring and things like that. People just don't even realise that the effects that it has on the child because they don't get enough oxygen during the night, which means they don't grow, they don't learn, and it has a lot of development problems for them because they do a lot of their learning before the age of 3. I would say just to really fight your corner and stand your ground, fight to get the consultant appointment.
Advice that Ruth might take as well. Ruth, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
How many times has your little lad been infected now?
My little lad had his first episode of tonsillitis at 11 months. He's 27 months now and he's had 19 episodes.
So 16 months he's had 19 infections?
19 separate infections, if you could actually separate them, because on so many occasions there's only been a couple of days in between where he's well and then he's sick again. He's been hospitalised for tonsillitis 4 times since March this year as a result of he has very high temperatures and he has febrile seizures.
And how many times has he been on antibiotics? 19?
He's had 19 antibiotics, but in between he's also been on prophylactic, which is preventative antibiotic treatment, which helps a small bit, but he does still get tonsillitis while he's on an ongoing 7-day-a-week antibiotic.
Presumably he's being seen within the public system as well, because this is not really the sort of thing that private practices deal with, is it?
It's not. I mean, where it can be managed with the GP, we just work with antibiotics and treatment there, but where it becomes very severe, he does require hospitalisation. He's seen by, he's under an ear, nose and throat consultant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, getting the referral, getting seen by the ENT consultant was very difficult insofar as referrals were being sent in from GPs, from hospitals, and ENT just didn't want to see him first off because he was so young. But he became so severe that they couldn't actually ignore him any longer. They saw him, and after seeing him, we were told
they want to take them out.
The consultant said she would do the tonsillectomy when he was 2.5. So he's coming up to 2.5 now. He'll be back at outpatients the end of September, and I'm hopeful that they'll arrange a date then.
Okay. So. Was that a relief to you?
It was a huge relief. Just I think the most frustrating part was trying to get into the system, trying to get seen by ENT. He would have been, I think, put on the long finger. They would have just fobbed him off because of his age. If it had
19
been for
infections in 16 months, I mean, that's
it's constant. I haven't been able to work in 7 months. Like I said, you can't book a day trip, let alone a family holiday, let alone a weekend break, because he's sick so often. He wouldn't have got into the ENT system or seen by the ENT consultant had he not been an inpatient. Because we're being referred through the outpatients, like I said, they just didn't want to see him because of his age. But when he was referred as an inpatient, he had a seizure at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I put him in the car, and my husband stayed home with our older boy and brought him to A&E. And
febrile seizures, it's just something else. But hang on a second, let me bring in Francis here. Francis, you think parents should resist the temptation to get this operation done?
Yes, hello, Philip. I do, based on my own experiences. My daughter is now in her 20s, and from about the age of 6 years of age to about 12 years of age, she was pretty plagued by tonsillitis. We'll say in a year, in 12 months, she probably had up to about 6 episodes. And I remember various doctors at the time tried to persuade me to let her have surgery. And I resisted because I remembered from my own childhood that I had tonsillitis as a child, and my father at the time wouldn't allow me to have my tonsils removed because he had had his removed at 18 and it hadn't made any difference. I have to say that I had no consequences. My tonsils were very large and I had no further consequences. I had tonsillitis, yes, maybe for up to 3 years, but then after that I was clear. And my daughter from the age of 12, from between 6 and 12, yes, she did suffer regularly, and the tonsils would have been infected. But she has not really had tonsillitis since the age of 12, and as I said, she's now in her 20s. So I think probably the tonsils, I'm not a medical person, but I think that they probably serve a function, and that is maybe preventing more serious infection.
But they do serve that function, but I mean, where you have a child, Francis, that hasn't developed, hasn't grown, hasn't walked, and has had 19 painful infections in 16 months, would you revise your opinion?
Well, obviously, every case has to be seen separately, and I'm not au fait with the case that you're referring to here.
This is Ruth's case.
But I expect...
Hi.
Sorry, Ruth. I mean, have I summed it up correctly?
You absolutely have. I think the lady's right. You know, each case has to be assessed individually, but I think there's a significant difference between an average of 6 cases a year and 19, okay, it's in 16 months, 19 cases, whereby, you know, it's all relative, really. I think my understanding is that the cutoff point for consultants is around 5 cases per year. Now, if the child is quite young, they will they'll revise that. They will probably need to have at least 7, 8, 9 before they'd even be seen when a child is very young. So 6 is probably just one over that cutoff point. So it's more of a borderline than an extreme case, I think, really. And I mean, no, I don't think any parent wants their child to go through surgery, and the risks of surgery in a very young child are great because of their decreased volume of blood and so on, and the risks that would go with even a small bleed.
Yeah. I mean, whatever about the effectiveness of the operation, the whole business of putting anybody under a general anaesthetic, no matter what age, is not something that you can take lightly.
No, it's certainly not, and there are risks, you know, major risks attached to that. So I don't think any parent will take it lightly. But I think, I mean, if my son was in or around that sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 episodes a year, yeah, I would certainly be more reluctant than I am at the moment. But like I said, you know, it affects every aspect of his life and our life that we can't really plan for anything, because, you know, you just don't know when he's going to be sick. He said it's been 2 weeks since his last episode and he's drooling profusely the last couple of days.
Well, so indeed for you as well, to have not been at work in 7 months now as well. And
I had been working. Now, it was part-time work, and both my children are young, so...
they're in fine, you know, voice now, anyway.
Yes, that's the older
they're unfortunately undermining your story, aren't they?
I know, yeah, he's not really making a case for my argument here at all. But,
All right, look, ladies, thank you very much. Two very interesting perspectives on that, and Brianon, thank you to you as well.
Okay,
we'll take another break.
1850 715 815.
This week, the weekly numbers are about our most vulnerable road users. 22, the number of pedestrians killed this year. That's 8 more than this time last year. 15, a tragic and worryingly high number of motorcycle user deaths. And 9, this is the number of cyclists killed on our roads so far this year. That's more than double this time last year. Behind every number, there's a real person. Every time you use the road, you can help to lower the numbers. From the Road Safety Authority and on Garda Síochána.
Beauty's hotels are keeping our value promise. With rooms in Dublin from €69 at Newlands Cross, €79 at Dublin Airport and Leopardstown, and €89 at Bald Bridge. Plus, a further 10% discount for online advance purchase. Book direct for best deals on beautieshotels.com or low call 1890 79 89 99.
1850 715 815.
Geraldine, hello, how are you?
Hello, how are you doing, Philip?
Back to poor old John, living with all of his newspapers taking over his house and his life, it sounds like. You were suffering with depression for a while.
I still am suffering with depression. I've been suffering with it for a few years, and I was actually hospitalised last year. But, no, I was just listening to him on the radio, and actually my heart went out to him because a lot of the symptoms he describes sound to me like very much like depression and anxiety. And I just wanted him to know that there are actually support groups. I've been going to Aware for over a year, and I have to say that it's been better than... I am on medication, but it's been better than medication because, you know, the group there all suffer with some form of depression, anxiety, anxiety, and just talking to somebody who understands what you're going through.
You heard his fear, though, was that he didn't want to talk to people who were also suffering because he felt that they might drag him down. Did you have any of those kind of reservations going to this support group?
Definitely. I remember what happened was when I was in hospital, an advocate came in. He would come in and talk to go around the patients talking to them. And he actually said to me to give it 3 or 4 weeks. And the first time I went, I thought, what am I doing here? I really just thought, I don't want to hear other people's problems.
Yeah.
But afterwards, everybody was just so supportive. And I found as the weeks went on, you know, just being able to offload how you feel, and people understood exactly. Like, I mean, he's talking, John, is his name John?
Yes,
He was talking about that, the suicidal thoughts, and he feels he's going down. Like, it's like as if he's going into that dark place. And just going there, the support and the help they can give you, you know, it's just amazing.
Is it because this group of people understands as well, Geraldine,
exactly,
in a way that people who aren't living with it, aren't suffering with it, who are inclined, and let's face it, I'm sure everybody not suffering or doesn't have an appreciation of depression has said to those, or at least thought, would you ever just get up and get on with it?
Exactly. I mean, we say it to ourselves, I've said it myself, you know, pull yourself together and snap out of it. But it's actually, like, it's an illness like any other illness.
You wouldn't say it to somebody with a broken leg.
Exactly.
So you can't say it to somebody with depression, absolutely.
But it's just, going and talking, Aware, he could even ring Aware. I mean, they have a helpline, they have an email support group, and they even do a life skills program, you know, to help you to cope. It's kind of like cognitive behavioural therapy. But, like, the group is there, and it's very confidential, you know, nothing is said outside.
What do you discuss? What do you share? Obviously, don't betray any confidences, but...
You don't actually have to speak when you go. You can go for the first few weeks. They recommend that you just, you know, listen and see, because just listening to people, you say, oh yeah, that's me, I've been there, you know, and everybody gives each other tips on how to cope, and just the friendliness, and I don't know, everybody is just so supportive of each other, you know, and it's very confidential. You know,
good.
It's just being able to talk, because you do feel very much alone. And when even psychiatrists will say that they don't fully understand themselves, that, you know, unless you've been there, you don't.
And is the medication and the combination of group therapy working for you now?
I have to say, like, medication is kind of hit and miss. Not every medication suits, you know, everybody is different. And I mean, it's obviously helping me. The medication is obviously helping me sometimes, but the mornings are dreadful, and that terrible, it's like a fear or anxiety, I don't know what, how to describe it, but it's a kind of a dark feeling in the morning. But, you know, it's a horrible sensation, but I mean, just knowing that other people are go through that as well, and if you get a bit of structure or routine going, you know, and even getting support from friends, like good. We even text each other just to, you know, and meet up every, just he needs to kind of get out of that isolation
and talk to people who understand him and who can think or see how, understand how he thinks. Geraldine, thank you very much for your call.
No
very
problem.
Good.
I just hope that he will get in touch with somebody, like, because there is help. I mean,
he will.
So alone.
Look, if he can ring Liveline, he can ring Aware, he can ring somebody else. He's obviously at that point where he recognises he needs the help and the support.
But if I can give you the Aware, the helpline.
We'll pass it on to him, don't worry. Thank you very much, Geraldine. All right.
Okay, then, thanks very much, and I wish him well.
As indeed do we all. 1-850-715-815. Francis, good afternoon, how are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. How are you?
Back to what we were talking about at the top of the programme and these yahoos, these thugs threatening people on their own doorsteps in their own homes with violence. What's your thoughts? What are your solutions?
Well, I remember, Philip, when the lady from the revenue was on and she was saying that she would go to the ends of the earth to get money from the property tax. She would take it out of your pension, out of your wages, out of your salary, out of your bank account and all the rest of it.
Would they go to the ends of the earth to make these fellas tax compliant as well, you're thinking?
I think there's a lot of people have a perception that the revenue is not interested in going after these people, that in fact they might be a bit afraid of going after them. And I remember on Liveline a few weeks ago, a farmer saying that someone came to his door and what he said to them was, I'm all up with the revenue now, so everything you do for me has to be VAT correct and all the rest of it.
Go
and
down the Al Capone route is what you're saying anyway.
Absolutely.
Get the tax man after them. All right, Francis, thanks very much. I have to take another break here.
1850 715 815.